I had been wondering for quite a while how this relationship with Viharpan and Aish, where it all began. And this week, Azriel Gans filled me into some of the history. Around 10 years ago, to the day, Rabbi Hartman and his uncle from Queens, I was told, came to hear Rebbe give his Priyecha Drasha. And afterwards, they met, and Rebbe was under the assumption that the uncle, who's older, was a Mechaber in the parish of Maharal, because he was so shocked that someone so young could have wrote such a masterpiece. And one of the Baal Batim had insisted Rabbi Hartman give a shir the next day of Tisha B'Av. And Maharal, Rabbi Hartman said he wasn't prepared. I can't give it. And after much persistence, he caved in, and of course he gave a shir, and no one would have known he wasn't prepared. Now we're here 10 years later, same night, still in Gullus, still sitting on the floor, no Beis HaMikdash, no Mashiach. But in the absence of Rebbe this year, who better than Rabbi Hartman to fill in and give us chizuk as we begin this day of mourning.
It's difficult to speak about something which happened so many years ago. It's like when you come to a shiva, if you pay a shiva visit to someone, of someone who died unfortunately young, and everybody's sad and mourning, but there's a 3-year-old kid who's jumping and going and coming because he never doesn't know better. We're a little bit like that 3-year-old. It's like a village of blind people that they don't know what it means to have eyesight. I think, however, this year at Esh, we could do it maybe a little bit better, because for the good reasons, Rebbe is not here now. And that's what it is. Whatever Rebbe is for this shul, Baruch Hashem, he's doing fine and well in Eretz Yisrael, but he's not here. And whatever Rebbe Weinberg is for this shul, that's what Beis HaMikdash is for Am Yisrael. Trying to picture Esh Kodesh without Rebbe because he's in Eretz Yisrael. Try to picture how this shul would look like. With all due respect to myself and others, it's just there's something major missing. That's what it is when we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. So from one point of view, it's understood that it's hard for us to connect. We all probably feel guilty that we're not connecting enough. I would like to say some words about that. The fact that we feel guilty about it is a good sign. In Sefer Ezra and Perek Gimel Pasuk Beis, it says that when the Beis HaMikdash was built, the second Beis HaMikdash, so those who remembered the first Beis HaMikdash were crying and sad because the second one could not compare and match the first one. But the youngsters were thrilled because they had a Beis HaMikdash. So that's speaking about 70 years after Churban Bayis Rishon. It's pointed out in Sefer Ezra that the younger generation did not feel it anymore. And whatever fell short in Bayis Sheni did not sadden them, because they did not know better. That's what's written in Sefer Ezra. We see also with the Holocaust, it's not the same when I was growing up as a kid and when kids are growing up here today. It's just different. The other day, I was by my granddaughter's sitter party. It was here in New York. My wife and I were there. They invited also grandparents. And I see 120 little girls dressed Shabbos clothes at the height of a table, all excited to get their sitter. And I remember I started to cry. Why? 120 girls, cute, adorable. Thought to myself, their grandparents or great-grandparents were hardly made it maybe 75 years ago. And here they are, one school in New York, in the neighborhood here. 120 little girls. 75 years ago, who would believe it would happen? Another 30 years from now, they're going to be the future Jewish mothers. Less than 30 years. That's what I was thinking about and holding back my tears. The young fathers, who were 30 years old, were texting while I was having these thoughts. And I said to myself, it's not their fault. I was born in the late 50s. It was called Moitzei Shoah. My parents were not in the Shoah. My grandparents were not in the Shoah. But we were all were affected from it. I remember when I was 12 years old, we lived already in Eretz Yisrael. And for some reason, that I don't recall now, it was 6th grade in elementary school, the Rebbe asked the 36 boys, who of you has two sets of grandparents? Two Bubbies and two Zaydis. I was the only one in the whole class. I raised my hand. Then I did not understand what it meant. Now when I look back, I understand what it means. I grew up in a generation that Bubbies and Zaydis was rare. My brother-in-law, Ari Bergman, who lives here in Lawrence, I'm sure a lot of you know him, he's an Ilui. He told me as a five-year-old, when he would go to the park in São Paulo, he noticed that only the non-Jews have grandparents come along. The Jewish kids don't have grandparents. Or it's the parents, or it's a maid, but not grandparents. As a five-year-old, he asked himself, how come we don't have grandparents? Both of his parents were survivors. So, as a Lui, he answered himself, grandparents is something goyish. The goyim have church, and they have grandparents. We don't go to church, we don't have grandparents. That's how he answered himself. So that's from one point of view, that's very, very hard for us to connect to something which happened 1,945 years ago, to be exact. But from the other point of view, we have a chiyuv gomor to Miss Abel in Yerushalayim. The Gemara says in Maseches Gittin Daf Nun Zayin that there was a whole kfar village called Sakina, which was wiped out because they didn't Miss Abel in Yerushalayim enough. The Yavetz in the Siddur says that all Jewish suffering throughout the Golus is a tribute to the fact that we forgot what Yerushalayim and Beis HaMikdash is. So, yes, from one point of view, it's hard for us to connect to something which happened so many years ago. From the other point of view, it's our chiyuv. So let's see a little bit what we can do about it. How could we connect to something which happened then? Obviously, the direction is, it's al kiein elokai bekilbi matzuni haro yisaele. All tzaros that we're going through ad etzem yom hazeh is because of the lack of Beis HaMikdash. I'll explain a little bit more, and I'll just prove it from a Gemara in Ksubas. The Gemara says in Maseches Ksubas Daf Samach Beis Amud Aleph that there was a Jew and a Goy walking together, and the Jew was walking very quickly, and the Goy tried to keep up with him, but he couldn't. So the Goy was trying to stop the Jew from going so quick. So says the Gemara, he told him, Beis HaMikdash got destroyed. Beis HaMikdash got destroyed. Referring to probably the way it's mashed from the Gemara to Chumash Beis Rishon. And he thought that would stop the Jew from going so quickly. And the Jew did a anacha. Anacha would be in English a sigh. And the Gemara says, anacha shoveres chatzigufa shel adam. And the Gemara was planning that this sigh should slow down the Yid. But the Gemara says that the Yid still went on quickly. So when they finished, whatever, so the Goy asked him, I mentioned to you the Chor Beis HaMikdash, and you sighed. How come that didn't slow you down? So he says, we're like a mother that Nebuch lost a few children. That's what Rashi says there. So we became a little desensitized. So when another tzara happens, we're already a little bit used to it. That's what the Gemara says. Now the Gemara is referring to Chorban Beis Rishon. So why is it compared to a mother that lost a few children? Why not to a mother that lost one child? Obviously the Gemara is saying that the Churban Beis HaMikdash is not just one tzara, it's the kickoff and the beginning for many to follow. Even at the time there was only one Churban, it's called many Churbanas. That's what you see from that Gemara. So what we got to try to understand tonight, oh boy, so what I would like, at the time that I have, to try to a little bit understand what we lost. And again, in this shul tonight, just think about it. If Rebbe would say he's moving to Eretz Yisrael, he's not coming back now. He's going to stay in Eretz Yisrael. What would you feel? Our whole guidance is lost. And that's when you start crying. The Maharal says tears come when you don't know. From the word navoch, bechi and navoch are the same word, says the Maharal. Namely, when you're perplexed, you don't know, how do you go on from here? What do? That's when you start crying. So let's go a little bit into this Sukkuda. What did we lose from not having the Beis HaMikdash? It says in Yeshayahu, Ki mitzion teitzei Torah, udvar Hashem Yerushalayim. Tosis in Bava Basra, Daf Kaf Aleph Amud Aleph explains. What does it mean, mitzion teitzei Torah? Why did Torah come about from Yerushalayim? Says Tosis, Lefi Shehaya Ro'eh Gdusha Gdoila, Kohanim Oiskim Ba'avoida, Haya Mechaven Libo Liyiras Shomayim, Ba'oisik Ba'Torah. We had a constant, tangible example of something which would promote us to have Yiras Shomayim. The Lashon of Tosfos says, Kohanim Oiskim Ba'avoida, Haya Mechaven Libo Liyiras Shomayim, Haya Oizalik. It would help for learning Torah and Yiras Shomayim. The Shulchan Aruch, in the third Seif of the Shulchan Aruch says, Ra'ui Yiras Shomayim, Sheyem Meitza V'Doeg Al Churban Beis HaMikdash. It's Halacha of the Shulchan Aruch, Halacha number 3. Aruch Haim is the beginning of the Shulchan Aruch. Halacha number 1 is the Shevisi Hashem Negdi Tamim. Halacha Gimel, Seif Gimel, Ra'ui Yiras Shomayim, L'chol Yiras Shomayim, Sheyem Meitza V'Doeg Al Churban Beis HaMikdash. Why is it a din in the year of Shemayim? Why not Ohay of Shemayim? Why not Stam Ayin? Why is it a tribute to Yiras Shemayim? Because when the Beis HaMikdash was came, we had something which cultivated and pushed for Yiras Shemayim. You just have to see it. If you would just see it, that was the kiyum of Kimitzion Tetzetera. We don't have that now anymore. If you want to get a little bit of glimpse of just seeing something, that would make such a difference. Rav Aaron Kotler in his Sefer brings that he has a Masara that whoever saw the Vilna Gaon learning Torah, that had an impact on him for a few years. Whoever saw the Vilna Gaon davening, the Yadua Beverur, that's Lashon of Rav Aaron there. If you saw the Vilna Gaon davening or learning Torah, you were not the same person afterwards. That's the Vilna Gaon. If you would have seen the Beis HaMikdash, how much more so? We don't have that now. And we're struggling, how do we get Yiras Shomayim? I heard from my Rebbe when I was 13 years old that he has a Masara, that the Vilna Gaon in his later life had to go through an eye treatment. He never left his house, the Vilna Gaon. He had a minion come to his house. He was a legend in his lifetime, but no one ever saw him. But he had to go for this eye treatment, so he had to leave Vilna, travel for 24 hours straight to go to the doctor, and then come back after a week. And he was already too old to go for a 24-hour journey. They looked at the map, and they saw a little town called Zaloshi. And they asked the people of Zaloshi if they'll be willing to see, to host the Vilna Gaon for the night. He said, of course. The Vilna Gaon in our place? Betach. The Vilna Gaon came to that village, but they didn't get a good glimpse. They couldn't see him. He came immediately, they took him straight, and they put him in a house, and no one saw him. They were very disappointed that the Vilna Gaon's in their home, in their village, and they can't see him. This is a documented story. I checked it from a few versions. It's Emes Lamita. They decided they're going to climb up a tree, and there from that height, you could look into the window and see the going loud and clear. They made a queue, a line the whole night, people going up and down the tree to see the going for 30 seconds. This one said, I saw the going do like this with his right hand. I saw him do it with his left hand. I saw him flip the page. Such his slavos, they saw the going. The Goyen went to sleep at 4 o'clock in the morning. That's what he used to do, and wake up half an hour later. The Goyen slept 4 times a day, a half an hour. That's how he slept. And while he was sleeping, they still went up and down the tree. He slept on his left side, then his right side. The Goyen woke up at 4:40, not 4:30. He asked his shamash that was with him in the room, what time is it, please? So he told him 4:40. 4:40? I blew 10 minutes. Zaloshi is fashloft, said the guy. Zaloshi is asleep. In the morning, the guy went on to his journey, and the people of Zaloshi knew the guy's coming back in a week. And he said on us that we're fashloft. We cannot go on living that way. We got to do tshuva. That week, said this man, who was already an old man when he said over the story, the tshuva that they made and the soils that they had made a seir shemei tshuva look like for little babies. Everybody did tshuva on lashon hara, on bitul Torah, giving tzedakah. A week later, the Goyen came back. And again, the same episode, no one saw him. He went straight up to the house and up and down the tree. I saw the Goyen go with his right hand. I saw the Goyen go with his left hand. And the Goyen went to sleep at 4 o'clock. And he woke up at 4:20. And he said, oh, Zaloshi is awakened. A whole city was turned around because the Goyen said 2 words. If we would have had a Beis HaMikdash, we would have had a constant reminder. Hey Jews, shape up. Hey Jews, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's in us. There's Shechina. We can't ignore him. We don't have that now. To bring out this idea of the Hashpah of the Beis HaMikdash, which we don't have today, is the unbelievable story of Yosef Mishisa. Let me tell you the story of Yosef Mishisa. It's brought down in the Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah, Samachei Kav Beis. There's 2 stories there. It says, Vayarach es reach begadav. Yitzchak smelled the clothing of Esav. Say Chazal, Vayarach es reach boigdav. The word beged could also be read as boiget. Like the word me'il could be like me'ila. Which means, boiget means what?
Rebel.
A rebel or?
Treachery.
Treachery. And the Medrash brings 2 stories of Rishon Gemurim, how they did tshuva in a nutshell. One of them is, not Nogiataz, I'll just say it in short, of Yossi ben Yoezer, who was a Tana being executed by the Sarah Huge Malchus. So from that, according to that Shita, from that point of view, it's very much Nogiata Tisha B'Av. And he was being executed on Shabbos. And they were riding him on a horse to execute him. At that second, while he's being led to his execution, his nephew, Yaakov, who was a bum, and was not Shem HaTorah Mitzvahs, was riding on his horse on Shabbos. And they met in some kind of tragic way. And to show you the level of that nephew, the nephew told his uncle, hey, look at the horse that I'm riding on, and look at the horse that you're riding on. I'm going on Shabbos and having fun, enjoying myself. You're being executed. You can understand what level this nephew was, if that's the moment that he had to say this. So his uncle replied to him, if you have it so good, if those who transgress the will of Hashem have it so good, those who fulfill the will of Hashem, how much more so they're going to have it good? And if you asked, what do you mean? You're being executed. What do you mean you're going to have a good? Obviously, the uncle was referring to Olam Haba, but the nephew couldn't have that. He says, what do you mean you're going to have a good? In 3 minutes, they're going to kill you. So he flipped around the Kal v'Chomer, the uncle, and he said, well, if those who observe the will of Hashem suffer, those who transgress the will of Hashem, how much more will suffer? You know what's going to be tomorrow? Says the Medrash that second Kal v'Chomer entered his heart like a poison of a snake, and immediately he was chayz b'tshuva. He committed 4 Arba Misas Pesdin, and Rabbi Yosef ben Ezra said on him that he beat him to Gan Eden by 1 hour. Rabbi Chaim Shmulevitz speaks about that Medrash. How come the uncle said the first Kal v'Chomer first, and then the second one only second? Okay, but that's not for tonight. The Medrash goes on with another story, that Yosef Meshisa, who was a lowlife, when the Romans came into Beis HaMikdash, the Romans understood that they could only be machiv Beis HaMikdash if a Jew will go in there and take something for himself of the kelim. That means the Beis HaMikdash lost its chashivas. So they went to Yosef Meshisa, who was a lowlife. They said, go into Beis HaMikdash and take for us a vessel, and whatever you take out is yours. Yosef Meshisa did that, and he took out a menorah. So the guy said, a menorah is too much for you to take. It's all gold. It's clay melech. We'll keep that one. You got to go in again and take something else for yourself, which is smaller. He says, I'm not going to go in again. Why not? I transgressed the will of Hashem once. I'm not going to do it again. They tried to offer him bribery. You'll be exempt from taxes for the next 3 years. Go in one more time and take a small kli. I'm not going to do it. We're going to kill you if you won't. Kill me. We're going to torture you if you won't. Torture me. And the Medrash goes on to explain how he died in a terrible death. Tortured to death. Yosef Meshisa. Asks the Ponovitch Rav, what happened to Yosef Meshisa? How come the first time he went in, he took the menorah, and he was very happy with that? And then suddenly something changed. He's not willing to go in the second time. Even though they're going to kill him for it. What changed? Said the Ponovitch Rav, if you enter the Beis HaMikdash, it changes you. And even someone who was a lowlife, like Yosef Meshisa, once he entered Beis HaMikdash, he was elevated. He's not going to do it again. Come what may. Because he entered the Beis HaMikdash once, took out the menorah, he will not do it again. Come what may. The Port of Rajiv used to bring about that an example. Look at the Ashpa of the Beis HaMikdash, of just going in, and look how elevated Yosef Meshisa. We don't have that anymore. So where are we going to get Yerush Shemaim today from? Who's going to give us the kleches not to look at sites that we're not supposed to look at? Who will give enough Yerush Shemaim for that? If we have a Beis HaMikdash, we would have had it. We don't have it now. You know, when Beis HaMikdash existed, there were Nevim, and Bais Rishon, part of Bais Sheni, the Goyen says in Mishlei, that whenever he had a question, he went to ask the Navi. And whenever he had a question, what should I do with my life? What's my tafkid? You went to a Navi, and the Navi told you, what's your tafkid? He said he gauged it according to your Shorash Neshama, and according to your Guf, and he told you what your tafkid was. Who's telling us today what's our tafkid? How do I know if I'm not wasting my life? How do I know the decisions that I made and the career that I took upon myself is not the biggest mistake I ever did in my life? Who's telling me that? Maybe I should have been something totally else. We're lost. But when Beis HaMikdash was kind, we had the Nevi'im. They could have showed us the way. wayside. But the lashon of the Shulchan Aruch is she meitzer v'doeg al chuba beis hamikdash. Usually Chazal say doeg u'meitzer. That's the lashon here. It's meitzer v'doeg. I saw that the Pele Yoetz on his commentary to the Shulchan Aruch, which is called Chesed La'alafim, says meitzer is on the past, doeg is on the future. What does it mean? On the past is to see what we missed, and on the future. So let's take things that we should, let's see what we could rectify. What were the things that brought down to Chobo Meis HaMikdash that we could rectify? And generally speaking is, we got to go in the footstep of the Ovis. Listen to the Lashon of Chazal. Chazal say, Rashi brings it in Chumash, don't do averis that will cause, lo tasun ken la'ashem elokeichem. Don't do averis that will bring about the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. You know what the Lashon of Rashi is? Al tasu avoinois shigmu lemikdash avoiseichem sheyischarev. The Mikdash of the Avos. There's no reason for Rashi to say Mikdash avoiseichem. He could have said lemikdashchem. Mikdash avoiseichem. The Mikdash of... When we deviate from the derech of the Avos, that's when we lost the Beis HaMikdash. When we go back to the Derech HaAvos, we'll get the Beis HaMikdash back. What was, let's start with Yaakov. What was Yaakov's message? Torah. Learning Torah. Rav Moshe Shapiro told me recently, in the name of the Bisker Rav, and this is a very, I asked him a few times, the Bisker Rav said this? So tell me yes. Why were Sephardi Jew, Sephardi Judaism, why were they saved from the Shoah? Why did the Ashkenazim get it more? I would never dare to try to answer this question. Rav Moshe told me in the name of the Bisker Rav, because it says in Pirkei Avos Perek Shishi, Oy lehem labriyos mi'elboina shel Torah. Make sure you don't insult the Torah. Ashkenazi Jewry did so. With the Haskalah and the Enlightenment, we were insulting the Torah, said the Bisker Rav. Sephardi Jewry did not. That's what the Bisker Rav said. So, boys, let's take this point a little bit further. We got to make sure that we don't insult, belittle the Torah. Let's be honest, Chaver. If you have a simcha at home, Baruch Hashem, Mazel Tov, a daughter or a sister got engaged, and you need help to schlep the benches, the chairs, to make the Mazel Tov. And there's two boys in the family. One is a top lawyer in Manhattan. The other is a yeshiva bachar. Who will be the one to be called, come home, help us prepare for the simcha? The lawyer or the yeshiva bachar? Please be honest. Who will be told, hey, come home, we need help? I don't think you'll be upset with me if I'll say the yeshiva bachar will be called home. Why? The lawyer's making money. He gets paid $500 an hour. We can't ask him to come home. But the one who's learning Torah, okay, that's no big deal. He'll make it up later. Maybe the lawyer will make it up later. No, that's different money. That's not the money that he's losing here. So why by Torah it's understood? Because he's not making $500 an hour. Yeah, but David HaMelech said, Toivli Torah Spicha, Me'al Feizav Chesed. Right, that's what he said? So why do we call him the lawyer first? Isn't that El Boina Shel Torah? I was told that Reb Shmuel Birnbaum, the Rosh Hashiva of the Mir, Zatzal, there was some time near Shavuos, years ago, that there was a strike of the Chevra Kedisha. Maybe some of the people remember it. And they needed the people to dig the graves. So they asked Reb Shmuel Birnbaum, Rosh Hashiva, could you let go, send a few Yeshiva Bachim over? that they could help us dig the pits for the Chevra Kedisha, for the Mesim. He answered Rav Shmuel Birnbaum, first go to Wall Street and see how many people you get there. If you're missing some, call me. That's El Boyner Shul Torah. Baruch Hashem, here on Sundays they started a program. But if we don't learn well on Sundays or Shabbos, what's our isn't that El Boyner Shul Torah? The Chofetz Chaim says that if a person doesn't have time to learn throughout the week because he's making parnasa, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will accept it. But then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to ask him, what did you do on Shabbos and Sundays? Then you didn't have to go to work. How much did you learn then? Says the Holy Chofetz Chaim, if he learned on Shabbos and Sunday well, he'll get reward not only for the 2 days that he learned, but for the whole week. He proved this point. And he did not learn throughout the week because of his job. And now that he, Shabbos and Sundays, he didn't have a job, he learned a few good hours a day. And if on Shabbos and Sunday he also didn't learn. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to tell him, it's not because of your job. Look, you didn't do it on Shabbos and Sunday either. You're still not interested in learning. And then I'll get punished not only for the 2 days, but for the whole week. This is called El Boyner Shel Torah. So bringing back the Beis HaMikdash is showing the Madrega of Yaakov Avinu, the Chashivas of Torah. The Netziv says that Chuba Bayis Sheni happened because Sinas Chinam, but Sinas Chinam was a kickoff of, you know of what? Chemdas HaMoman. They were too much into money. And their values were monetary values that brought down the Chuba Bayis Sheni. Could you imagine? That brought down Bayis Sheni. How does that connect to Sinas Chinam? If you want to look it up, what I said, the Netziv is Herchev Dover and Varim Peragdal Posikudal. And it concludes, Vadain Dover Ze Mirakit Beneinu. We still have that problem of values which are not necessarily Torah values. Says Rabbi Kotler on this point, V'im yesh netia l'chomrius, if he has chomrius of values, a big house, a big car, are very important to him. Av shi yasok v'yomol b'tera, even if he will sit on the Torah, ach yachshov gam mizeh al tanach yadcha. I could be both. I could be a Talmud Chacham and I could be rich. But you're only one soul. And says the Rabbi, so even the Torah that he does learn, it's not with the same passion. We already seen a few people that learned Torah, but because they were also involved in monetary pursuit, nothing really happened with them. Only if the Torah is their clone, vizulata ain't clone. Okay, Rabbi Sai. The opposite of sinas chinam is sensitivity. It's not avas chinam. I think it's a mistake when people say it. The opposite of sinas chinam is being sensitive. I was told that Shlomo Zalman Orbach was sitting on the bus, and a woman who was not dressed so properly sat next to him. So what should he do? Keep on sitting on the chair? He's Reb Shlomo Zalman. Getting up and sitting in a different chair, that will insult this woman. So you know what he did? He got off the bus, even though it was not his bus stop. Sensitivity, even to someone who's not dressed properly. It's no Reb Zalman Meltzer was once coming home from Yeshiva, and he made a few circles before he went up. And his Talmidim asked him, Rebbe, why aren't you going up straight to your home? He says, when I come, the maid stops singing. And I heard, and I know that she likes to sing to herself. So I'm going to wait till she finishes. And then I'll go up. That is the antidote to sinas chinam. Being sensitive to people and being sensitive to what people feel. This story I heard from Reb Yitzchok Margaretin, the Talmud Chacham from Cleveland. I would like to go on. One more nakuda. The Gemara says that on Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, the Beis Hamikdash got destroyed. What was the story of Kamsa Bar Kamsa? Let's just a quick recap. There was a fellow who was doing a party. He was very friendly with Kamsa, the opposite with Bar Kamsa. He told his servant, go invite Kamsa. And he mistakenly invited Bar Kamsa. And Bar Kamsa was sitting there. Comes the host into the party, and he sees his enemy, Bar Kamsa, there. He says, leave. I'll pay my dish. No, leave. I'll pay half of the party. Leave. I'll pay the whole party. I'll still leave. And he took him and threw him out. Bar Kamsa was very offended, and he went to tell it to the Roman Empire. The Maharal speaks about how come Kamsa's mentioned. What did he do wrong? He wasn't even there. That's what the Maharal asks. I want to ask a different question. How come the host remains nameless? He was the biggest culprit. He was Mamash of Russia. What's his name? It's not brought down anywhere. What's his name? So the Maharal asks, why was Kamsa mentioned? But what about the question, why isn't the host mentioned? He was the worst one here. He's the real criminal. And he remains nameless. Why is that so? I asked this to one of my children, and he told me the following. Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, the Maharal explains, that was a kmitza of a mincha. How would you say kmitza? It's disconnecting, right? Disattaching. Their friendships were done. That's a kamsa called Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. It was separation. I'll be your friend, so we'll fight together the other party. It was very cliquey. The whole society was built on that kind of friendship. Oysa chesed im chavruseah. They do chesed only to their friends. That was the cause. The result is that that's how people behaved. You know how come his name's not mentioned? It was the norm. If it's the norm, you don't have to mention his name. Obviously, the Beis Hamikdash was not destroyed because of three people. The Beis Hamikdash was destroyed because it was a norm. And first, I want to point out, there's a few norms that entered our life that I think we should just say, hey, we should do that. Don't answer the phone while you're davening. Don't! Don't text or look at the text while you're davening. It's oyav v'nayra to do that. You know, I live now in England. 3-4 years ago, the queen had her grandson get married. The whole world looked at the wedding. You remember, guys, when the grandson got married? Three, four years ago? They already have 2 children. And I was downstairs in the gym, my house downstairs is a gym, and I saw the wedding for about 10, 15 minutes. You know what I was looking for? Was anybody texting during the wedding? Not one soul. I asked someone who was there, a Choshev Yid was invited, was there any instructions, don't come with phones? No. They just understood. You're seeing royalty, you're seeing a queen. You're not going to text then. But we do text in shuls. And we take out the phone. Sometimes the phone rings, so we have the courtesy that we go out to answer the phone. But why are you answering the phone during davening? Why are you looking at the phone during davening? Whoever it is, it's not important in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a norm that we get used to. That people text and messages in the midst of davening. I won't be surprised if it could happen even on Tisha B'Av. Because tomorrow is a long davening. We have to text and find out what's happening. It's a norm that we should stop. It's wrong. It's like the name of the host is not mentioned because it was a norm. There's a few norms that we do which are totally accepted, but they're so wrong. Now, Rabbi said, who am I to give Musar? Chas v'shalom. I'm speaking to myself, I promise you. There's another norm, davening in the minyan 3 times a day. No, I'm not going to daven 3 times a day. No. Shabbos, okay. I'm sorry, I can't. My job does not enable me to daven in the minyan 3 times a day. Is that true? And if someone, Chas v'Shalom, loses his parent, he suddenly does find the time to daven three times a day in a minyan? Because he's a chiyuv? If he chas v'shalom lost a father or mother, does he daven them three times a day? Yes. So when you're not davening three times a day, what are you telling HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Only if my parent will die, I'll come daven? I'm not going to come if they're all alive. Take one of them, then I'll come. Is that the message you want to give the HaKadosh Baruch Hu? When they'll die, I'll come. But when they're alive and well, forget about mincha. Nah, no chance. If chas v'shalom I'll be a chiyuv, yeah, I'll come then, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. No, what, don't you want to tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu that your parents should live till 120 and you'll still come? My mother's 86 years old, till 120. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I promise you, I'll dab a mincha and a minyan. You don't have to take her for that. Please keep her for the next 34 years. I promise you, I'll dab it in a minyan anyway. I promise you. You don't have to bring me to davening through something like that. But that's how we live. We go to shul when there's a chiyuv. This is a norm that somehow, oh, the 11 months, yeah, he comes to shul. He says, Kaddish, yeah. He even fights with other people about the amud. It goes, it's my amud, it's your amud. Yeah, he's all into it. Did he starve that year? In those 11 months, did he starve? No. He worked it out. But once the chiyuv's over, oh, Baruch Hashem, if the parents are still alive till 120, I'm not going to come three times a day down in the minyan. That's the norm, which we are used to, and it's wrong. The Beis Hamikdash is a mokum avoida. We got to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we're willing to come to Bet Mikdash Me'at. Always. And Mitzvah Hashem. Baruch Hashem and Esh Kurdish, I noticed they don't talk to Darmini. They don't talk to Darmini. It's great. Baruch Hashem, I was here this morning. I'm so impressed every time I see it. You know it's called Esh for the word Sh Kurdish, right? That's how it's called. It's Gevaldik. Isn't it a bizarre when we're talking? Doing Kaddish, doing Chazor Sashatz. Shuls were destroyed. The Mishnah says shuls were destroyed because of that. That's people talk. So how can we show Kodesh Baruch Hu that we're mourning the destruction of the temple if our behavior sometimes will bring another one? That's the norm that we got used to. There's another norm, Chavre, and with this I want to conclude. There's another norm. We're so impressed with tangible and less with not tangible. Let's work on this, Chavoisa. I'll give you an example. My wife is from Brazil. I've been many times in Brazil, especially when my in-laws were living in Rio de Janeiro. Baruch Hashem, they made Aliyah now, they're in Eretz Yisrael. I remember I was once in São Paulo, and a very wealthy man who was about to do Chanukah Sabbais approached me and said, you know, I just built myself this lovely home. I need mezuzahs. Do you know in Eretz Yisrael, do you have friends who are soifrin? I said, yeah. I need 50 mezuzahs for my home. 50? Wow, can I know that? I told him, no, Chamishim Shari Bina, I'm trying to make a kesher. 50 gates, kol hakavod. I need it next week. I said, okay, I'll call my friends. I don't know if they have 50, but maybe he knows the other ones. Don't worry, now we'll get it here through FedEx, and by ya. Just do it, please. Oh, by the way, I forgot to ask the most important question. Yeah? How much does the mezuzah cost? So I told him, listen, I'm not in the mezuzah business. I don't know. But I remember when I bought mezuzahs for my home. You want a good mezuzah? Yeah, the best. It's $50 a mezuzah. That's how it was then. This is a story 20 years ago. I don't know how it is today. $50 for a mezuzah? Nah. Here in São Paulo, I can get it for 20. No deal. Okay. No deal. And we went to daven with Marv. And something was bugging me. After Marv, I approached him without him understanding what I'm getting at. I said that, you know, my wife is an architect. She was. How much did you pay for the handles? I'm interested. How much did you pay for, you know, every door has two handles. He says, you want to know how much I paid for the handles? They were Swedish made. $200 a pair. Tell me, you're willing to pay $200 for a handle and $20 on a mezuzah? Why is that so? So he, you know, he gets upset. So he tells me, well, why should I pay more? You get it for 20. Why should I pay more? I said, you could get handles for $10. Why are you paying more? I don't think it's a fair comparison. And he walked off. I had to ask Mechil on Yom Kippur. What's the answer, Chevra? What's the answer? I'll tell you the answer. Because handles, everybody sees. I want to impress my friends how rich I am. Inside the mezuzah, who sees it? So what difference does it make if it's a 20 or 50? As long as it's kosher, it's okay. By the way, the box of the mezuzah, the one outside, no, that's from silver. Because you see it. We adore what's tangible, and if it's not so tangible, who cares? A big gvir walks into the shul. Oh, you know what he's worth? Do you know what he's worth? He has 50 million in the bank in Switzerland. I sometimes ask these people, how many children does he have? Children? Three, four, I don't know. Children that you cannot hide, that you don't know how much he has. $50 million in the bank in Switzerland that you do know. Manyan. Yeah, it's Givaldic. He has 50 million. A big Rosh Hashiva comes into the shul. Another snorer? What does he want? And our kids notice who we really get excited about and who we don't. And you could say as much lip service as you want. They'll notice who you really got excited about. Rabbeinu Yehuda says in Sefer Mishlei, you want to know who you are? Tell me who your hero is. That's you. If your hero is Bill Gates, that's one person. If your hero is the Chazon Ish, that's another person. What pictures do you have in the bedroom? This you could ask on teenagers. Is it James LeBron or Abraham Kanevsky? That's who you are. Tell me who your hero is, and I'll tell you who you are. But these are norms that we got used to. Right? But it's so interesting, when you go to Havaya Chevra, I'm going to make myself a fool, but I just want to bring down this Nakuda of the norm that we got used to because there's no Beis Hamikdash. Did you ever hear the following eulogy? Oy, he loved money. He would do anything for a pizza. He was so into clothes. Oy, till he bought a pair of shoes. It was an avoida, an avoida. Did you ever hear that in the eulogy? It would be design a mess if you did. What do you hear in eulogies? He learned Torah. He did chesed. He gave tzedakah. But like when we come back from the Levaya, we're back to the money, the pizza, and the clothes. Would you want to be remembered for your love of money? Do you want that to be written on your tombstone? He loved money. He was mekayim the pasuk. Oyhev kesef. Would you want that to be on the matzeva? He adored money. He did anything for a few thousand dollars. Is that what you want to be remembered for? Of course not. But that's when we look at life from one prism. When we look at life the regular, coming back to the vine, we're back to it. Obviously, I want to conclude with one more norm. And this I know I'm causing that maybe I won't be invited again. It was nice knowing you. Everybody said, Tisha B'Av, what was the first Tisha B'Av? The first Tisha B'Av was Chet HaMeraglim. Chet HaMeraglim was rejecting Eretz Yisrael. I want to ask my brothers and sisters who are living in America and I'm today living in England, did you ask a Rav or Rebbe if you should stay in America or go to Eretz Yisrael? Rav Moshe Feinstein Paskins that Eretz Yisrael it's a mitzvah kiyumis, like tzitzis. That's what Rav Moshe Paskins. It's a Negro's Moshe. If your kid would come home from camp one day, from school day without tzitzis, and you would ask him, hey, why aren't you wearing tzitzis? He said, well, it's only a mitzvah kiyumis, it's only when you have Arba Kanfes. If you don't have Arba Kanfes, you don't have to. What would you tell him? Could you please put on a pair of tzitzis? Could you just make sure you put on a pair of tzitzis? Living in Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah kiyumis. They're heter not to live there. But did you ask anybody if you're under that heter? Are you, or maybe you were afraid what the answer will be? Did you check if you're under the? There's three big heterim and there's smaller heterim. The poskim know them. Did you ask a rav or adam gadol if you should live in America or in Eretz Yisrael? I'm asking Mechila if I'm wrong, but I think most people did not even ask. Why? Because I don't like Israelis. I need my Sundays. It's difficult. You know, the Gemara says in Maseches Brachos that three things are acquired only by Yisurim. What are the three? Eretz Yisrael, Torah, and Olam Haba. Do you want to give up Olam Haba because it's difficult? Nah. You want to give up Torah because it's difficult? No. You want to give up Eretz Yisrael because it's difficult? Yeah. Makara. Chevra, we got to ask ourselves, do you want to live a meaningful life or an easy life? That's a question to ask. Do you want a life, do you want to live an exceptional life? A life of growth and growing and getting closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Is that the life you want to live? Or the life that you want to live is, it should be comfortable. One of the biggest mistakes of today's life is that fun means happiness. And there's no greater mistake than that. On the opposite, what's the thing that gives you the most happiness? What would you say? If you ask a Yid, what gives him the most source of happiness? What would he answer? Children. Is it fun to have children? No. It's tzar gidavon him. When they're kids, they wake up in the middle, when they're babies, they wake up in the middle of the night. And then when they grow up, like the expression in Yiddish says, kleine kinder, kleine tzores, groyse kinder, groyse tzores. So is it fun raising children? No. But is that the biggest source of your happiness? Absolutely. So you see, it's not the same. Happiness and fun is not the same. And boys, just to conclude, we're Yidden. I know we're in Galus. And the Beis Hamikdash Hasheni was destroyed 1,945 years ago. And of course we're influenced by the environment that we live in. It's a pasuk in Tehillim, Vayisavu Bagoyim, Vayilmudu Maaseh. But remember that the first Tisha B'Av started because they rejected Eretz Yisrael. They had other reasons. They said we're afraid the Goyim, they are too powerful. But what does David HaMelech say? When he sums up Chetam Raimim, Vayimasu be'eretz chemda. What does Vayimasu be'eretz chemda mean? How can you say in English Vayimasu? They were disgusted by Eretz Yisrael. As if a Kodesh Baruch comes and says, hey, here's my gift. Let's say this is the gift. Hey, you want it? No, thank you. It's not for me. When Mashiach will come, we'll look into it. Meanwhile, it's not for me. Ask Adam Gadol if you, I promise you, if you ask Adam Gadol, I'll tell you to stay so that you can stay. But ask him. Not asking is cheating. Because in every other little thing, you do ask. Not this one. Yes, I know. We're afraid. Well, the answer will be chavre. But the first Tisha B'Av was because they rejected Eretz Yisrael. Let's make sure we don't chas v'shalom do a modern version of that chet of rejecting chas v'shalom Eretz Yisrael. Of course we care about Eretz Yisrael. This has nothing to do with tzioni or not tzioni chabad. That's not the point. When anything happens in Israel, we're immediately following and we daven. Of course. Ma'ish adaber. But what about you moving there with your children and grandchildren? No. Oh, I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. That's impossible. Why? Next topic, please. So let's just sum up what we spoke about today. I think what we spoke about could be divided into three points. Point number one, to understand how precious it was to have a Beis HaMikdash. Something that pumped into us Yiras Shamayim in a tangible way. It changed people in 1 second, as proven by Yosef Meshisa. It brought Yiras Shamayim to anybody who saw it. That's Kimitzion Tetzitera. Chayav Adam, Kol Yiras Shamayim Ra'ui Lo, she had made Silver Doeg al Chuv Beis HaMikdash. That was point number one. Point number two, trying to rectify the reasons which brought about the Churban HaBayis. The first bias has to do more with the lack of learning Torah. The second bias has to do with Chemdas Mamon, and David Cohen explains a lack of Bitochen. Chemdas Mamon means I don't feel I have enough, and my neighbor has more than me. And then I get envious and jealous, which leads to Sinas Chinam. It all started, though, that money was a real value. Let's try to work on that. And the third thing is norms that creeped in our life, and today no one even thinks there's something wrong with them. No one thinks it's wrong to text or to look at your phone while you're davening and you're standing in a shul. It seems normal. No, it's normal to ask the Ben Torah to come home to help, not the one who's working, because he's making money. These are norms. It's normal to say, I'm not going to live in Eretz Yisrael. I'm not even going to ask him. I'm not going to ask this question because I'm afraid of the answer. Chas v'shalom, we said. I remember once I told Rav Utner Zatzal, when I was 19 to 23, I had a source of being with Rav Utner every third week. He was my Beis HaMikdash. I was 19 to 23 years old. He died 10 days before my chasna. The Helik of Rosh Hashiva. And every third Thursday, I had with him one-on-one a session for between 2 to 3 hours. Ask anybody who's a Chaim Berliner what that means. It was living with a Beis HaMikdash. I could understand a little bit what we lost because of my relationship with Rav Utner. And I would tell him words that everybody says. And he would tell me, you're not allowed to use that word. It was a norm. I said weekend for Shabbos. Is that Nivulpe? I called Shabbos weekend. Do you know that he almost wanted to kill me for that? Shabbos is weekend. Shabbos Kodesh. Yom Chem Dosoi. That's called weekend. It's a Kodesh outlook. Never say weekend on Shabbos. Never. I spoke to him in Hebrew because I mentioned this already, right? Rabbi said when I was here last time, right? I spoke to him in Hebrew. And I told him the word l'shachnea, right? What does l'shachnea mean in Hebrew? What? I'm sorry? L'shachnea is to persuade. Very common word. He said, never use that word again. What's so terrible with l'shachnea? The root is kana, to surrender, tells the Rav Utner. If I convince you to think like my way, that means it's your weakness, according to this Goyish outlook. Well, if I admit that you're right, it's a powerful point. It shows strength on my side, not a weakness. Well, in the Goyish eyes, it's a weakness. Therefore, if I persuade you, that means you surrendered. L'shachnea. Never use that word again. As Rosh Hashiva, what word should I use instead? L'ashpia, he told me. I was speaking to him, Rabbi said, the first time when I speak to him, I'm just going to illustrate it. Rabbi said, and I did like this. Crossing my feet the way I felt. Again, is this so terrible? Again, I was almost shot. I had to bench a gremlin afterwards. This is how you sit, he tells me? You know, when you sit like that, what does it mean? It's body language. I feel comfortable. I'm your Rebbe, he tells me. I'm in my 70s, you're 19. That's how you sit in front of me? And I didn't understand what he meant. But then afterwards I saw, he's so right. That's like I'm in Kriya Satayra, or davening in Shul. I never do that anymore. It's a norm, which people got used to, and it's Oyem Venara. Tisha B'Av is a time to reflect on these norms that penetrated our value system, and we don't think that there's anything wrong with them anymore, because we're so into it. The worst thing is when a person is ill and he's not aware that he's ill. I'm sure you saw the clip of the Rebbe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, with the Meshumet. Did you see it, Rebbe? Whoever wants it, I'll be happy to email them. I'm not a Lubavitcher, I promise you I'm not. There was a Meshumet. Meshumet needs someone at the age of 65, came over to the Rebbe. I guess on that Sunday, giving out dollars. And there's subtitles in Hebrew if you miss the English. And he tells him, he's 65 years old, he says, when I was 29, I converted to Christianity. And here's a book which I published, I want to merge both worlds. And he was trying to lead the conversation to argue about Oysavahish, if he is the Redeemer, if he's not the Redeemer. So the Rebbe told him, the Rebbe didn't go that way. The Rebbe said, you're a Jew. You have a Jewish neshama. You're making yourself miserable by going to something which is almost up with the Zohar. So the fellow answered, I'm very happy. I'm not miserable. I'm very happy since I found him. So the Rebbe said, you cannot imagine how sick you are. He told him it's like someone ill who's not aware that he's ill. If you have a Jewish neshama, it's impossible that you're happy. Being Christian. Impossible. And he had a little bit of shpa, and the Rebbe was screaming at him, but not raising his voice, but still trying to make of him. And said, you know, if you come back, you'll show the whole world how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Erech HaPaim, that even someone like you could come back. Then he gives his book over to the Rebbe. And the Rebbe said, I'm taking one copy that you'll have one less to distribute. It was amazing to say, but the insight was, sometimes we're so ill, we're not even aware that we're ill. We think it's normal. So the boy said, we need a Beis HaMikdash, desperately. Desperately. And hopefully, in Yetz Hashem, next year, we won't have a Tisha B'Av. Meanwhile, we do. Okay.